Okay, this coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parsha Shlach. Unfortunately, Parsha Shlach, of course, initially deals with the terrible sin of the Meraglim. There's a fascinating Rabbeinu Bachai at the beginning of the Parsha that tries to explain the concept of Bitachon rather excitedly as it pertains to the difference between Bitachon and Ishtadlus, which, of course, we've discussed in previous years. Instead, we'll begin right away with a comment that appears at the beginning of the Parsha. Rashi notes the connection between the story of Miriam and that of the Meraglim. And Rashi tells us that the connection is to teach us that the Meraglim saw Miriam's punishment and didn't take the appropriate Musar. Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz asks why Rashi makes it seem like it was the main sin of the Meraglim, not taking the Musar. Weren't they simply punished because they tarnished the land of Israel? So Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz answers that although that wasn't the main error, in life one needs to learn from previous life experiences and take a personal perspective from it. When you see or hear something in the news and it doesn't affect you, this causes a tremendous loss in your opportunities for growth. And so therefore, the Meraglim didn't do so. It was no surprise that as a result, they committed an even bigger fail on the area, in the precise area, that Miriam and Aaron had to be punished. So of course, the Meraglim travel back and forth, and they come back and offer their report. And in the context, as everyone's getting whipped up into a frenzy, Kalev, of all people, gets all excited, and the Pasuk tells us, Vayahas Kalev Esa'am, Kalev silenced the people. And the Ramban notes that the real reason Moshe agreed to send the Meraglim was that their mission was not to figure out if they should conquer the land, but rather how to best conquer the land. And Reminiscent Alpert overhears that Sal adds that the people were not supposed to decide if they were supposed to conquer the land. When the Meraglim changed the conversation to decide whether they should, and they were stirring the nation up, that's when Kalev opened up and tried to shut down the effort of the Meraglim. Hence, Vayahas, he brought them the reminder. He came back and went ahead to silence them down. And therefore, later on in the parasha, when the people get punished, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns and makes the following declaration to Moshe. He says, V'yavdi Kalev, my servant Kalev, Ekev Ruach Acheres Bo, that because he had a different spirit. What does that mean, he had a different spirit? He had a different mind. He was of a different mindset. He offered a different answer. What does that mean, Ruach Acheres Bo? So Rav Yashuv Zatzal explains that when one is surrounded by a group of like-minded individuals who are bent on a sinister purpose, one doesn't only need to express a different idea. The person needs to have a totally different spirit to remain focused on the real truth. Kalev was able to withstand the peer pressure of the Meraglim, says Rav Yashuv, because he had an entirely different spirit about him. When he was in the land of Israel, he went to Hebron. He went to go ahead and speak to the Yishene Hebron. And as a result, because he came with a different spirit, he was able to overcome the challenge that the Meraglim presented. After we finish with the episode of the Meraglim, we get a series of three mitzvos. The first one, of course, V'hayyab achlechem ilechem aretz tarimu truma la'ashem. When you eat from the bread of the land, you have to have a mitzvah to separate challah. So why is it that after the sin of the Meraglim, the three immediate mitzvos that we receive were the ones of challah, nesachim, and the parsha of tzitzis? So the Chidushei Harim explains that it was a reminder to the three miracles that the Jews got in the Midbar, that they frankly didn't want to give up by going into the land of Israel. Of course, that's a reference to the man, which of course is Melachem Haaretz, the reminder, the Be'er, which is the nesachim, and the tzitzis, which served as a protector, which was a reminder to the Anani HaKavod that the Jews didn't want to give up. The late great Shemin HaTov, the Rabbi Bernard Weinberger, Zecher Tzadok Livracha, added that the reason that Chal is called Truma LaHashem is that whatever one does, he or she can do it L'Shem Shamayim. And so even the fact that one eats or needs, with a K, it's in of itself a means to raise oneself to Hashem, and that's man's job in life. Kain tarimu, right? We have a responsibility to lift ourselves up for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And what we will lift up will be a truma laHashem. What is a truma for laHashem? So Mori Rabbi Rav Shachter Shlita notes that the Torah calls four different things truma. The Torah calls challah truma. Here in this week's parsha, we know that fruit in the land of Israel that gets separated is called truma. Truma smicer, which is the tenth of the tenth that the Levi gets, that he gives over to the Kohen, that's truma smicer. And bikurim is also called truma. Why does this make a difference? So Rav Shechter explained to us that these Yisurim are mitzdarif together. When a person consumes them inappropriately or utilizes them inappropriately, the fact that they are all referred to as truma means that they can all be combined. Shechter added that there seems to be a requirement upon separating challah to declare truma l'Hashem, right? That we should declare it. And if so, why don't we do that today? Even though our challah today is only midrabanan, why is it that we don't say truma l'Hashem? So the Malbim explains that since we make a bracha on challah, and when one makes a bracha, that is the Shem Hashem, we don't need to separately recite the name of Hashem on challah. It's all of a sudden covered by the bracha itself. We are told in the parasha that there was an individual who was Mekoshe Sheitzim B'yom HaShabbos, that he was guilty of being the Mekoshe. And the Torah tells us they put him in a mishmar, in prison. Kilo Porash Ma'i Yaselo. It wasn't clear what should be done to him. How could they not know what to do with him? At the very least, they should have known of the fact that he deserved the death penalty. After all, the Torah uses the language, Uviyarta Arami Kibecha, that you have a responsibility to get rid of evil that exists inside of you. So, at least, you give him the death penalty, and as the Gemara notes, that when we have to choose a death penalty, so you select the one that's least offensive. So, at the very least, they knew he should have gotten the death penalty. Why would they say, Kilo Farash Maye Aselo? So my late Rebbe, Rabbi David Kavzeh, Chatzadik Livracha, from Karen Biavna, at the end of his year, Klali explained that the Torah is teaching an important idea here, that the one who does an Avera with good intentions can't be easily called Hara. The Torah says, Uviyarta Hara, you have to get rid of the evil. But a Jew who acts based on intentions that are purely L'shem Shamayim, a person doesn't have an ability to say, that's called Ra. That it could lead to being punished, because it's a chait. But it's not called Ra, and so therefore, it's lo porash, it's not understood, it's not clear, ma'ye yaselo. And so therefore, we have a responsibility instead to figure out what's the right way to deal with a wrong action that was intended to be done in the right way. We then read the parsha of Tzitzis, and we're told, v'lo sasur acharei levavchem acharei neichem, you shouldn't be swayed to follow your hearts and your eyes. And in the Sefer Mitzvos Shkulios, Rav Wolbe Zatzal, Rav Shlomo Volba, points out that man, in general, is stuck between two poles. One part pulls him towards the desire, right? One aspect grabs him and pulls him towards his taivos, and the other pole is towards godliness. And so this dual pole, explains Rav Volba, makes man sway in the balance like a boat on a sea. And so herein comes the mitzvah of tzitzis. It's like an anchor line to keep man on the straight and narrow of the tarayag mitzvos that serve as an anchor. It keeps him anchored down. The tzitzis line keeps us from drowning by anchoring us to the actions of the tarayag. Finally, in the Haftorah that we're going to read this coming Shabbos, we will read about a different set of meraglim, the episode that happens at the beginning of the book of Yehoshua, when Yehoshua sends two spies to go check out the city of Jericho. And in that context, the two spies wind up in the house of Rachav Hazona. And the Haftorah tells us that Vatoridem Bachevel Be'ar HaChalon, she lowered them down by a rope through the window. Why, says the Pasuk? Since her home was in the wall of the city, Ubisocha Kirhi Oshavas, and she would sit within the wall. Yalkut Shimoni, and I believe an interesting parallel exists in the Gemara in Zvachim Adav Kuftev Zayin Amid Aleph, Kuftev Zayin Amid Beis, but Rashi, the Yalkut Shimoni notes that Rachav Hazona was a prostitute, and in the city of Jericho she served every officer in the army and every political leader. The fact is that when she turned 50, she told HaKadosh Baruch Hu that she wanted to do tshuva, and she wanted to convert, and did, to Judaism. And she said, and explained to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that she sinned with three things, the kir, the chevel, and the chalon, the wall, the string, and the window. And she wanted Hashem to give her a chance to redeem herself for those averos. And Rashi explains that the rope, the window, and the wall were all ways that the adulterers were able to sneak into her home, and it was this that she really was seeking atonement for, the fact that they were going up and down through the wall. So Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal notes that this seems like a far-fetched pshat from the Yalkut Shimoni. Since the real prostitutes don't seem to use ropes, they lack the shame for their business. So what then did Rachav Hazona mean that I sinned with the rope, the wall, and I want the tshuva process to begin there? So Rav Schwab answers that we learn an important principle of tshuva here, that it begins in the Tzelem Elokim that exists in each person, the part that wasn't contaminated by sin. There are people in Canaan who had a bit of busha and dignity not to flaunt their extramarital affairs. That Rachav Azona was willing to support their busha and was willing to let them sneak out instead of walking in and out of her house through the front door like most of the people. That understanding and that willingness to approach and meet the people where they were served as an opening towards her challenge or her trip to Kedusha from the Tzelem Elokim side that she was. That's the part that led to her ultimate tshuva. Again, Rav Shimon Schwab tells us that within each and every one of us, the place where tshuva comes from the tshuka of the Tzelem Elokim, the desire of the Tzelem Elokim to recognize its sense of Kedusha. Sin sullies that recognition. But we have the ability to go ahead and overcome the sin. And may it be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's opportunity for us that im yenidach hachal mikzei ha-shamayim misham yikabetzcha Hashem Elokecha misham yikachecha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us find the Tzelem Elokim within ourselves and to build upon it so that He can go ahead v'yachzireinu l'tshuva shlema, to bring us the tshuva shlema v'avienu l'tzion iro berina. Shabbat shalom to all.